speaks about great detail about the last rites that were performed, Pura of Sora, and how Avram went ahead and he purchased the Marisa Machpela, paid a large sum of money, and the entire discussion that ensued between Avram Avinu and between Ephron and the Bnei Ches. And then it leads to the second chapter, after the death of Sora, speaks there that Avram appointed, in his older age, he appointed Eliezer, Eved Avram, his servant, to find a wife for his son Yitzchak. And it speaks again in very great detail of every aspect, how Eliezer went ahead, how he met Rivka, the discussions that was ensued between Eliezer and between her family. And then finally, as she comes back with him, her meeting with Yitzchak, and it says there that Yitzchak was consoled for the loss of his mother. And then we have the next chapter, the 25th chapter, which speaks about the other children that Avram Avinu had. And in addition to Yitzchak and to Yishmael, and it speaks about the death of Avram Avinu, the fact that Yitzchak and Yishmael buried him, and they buried him in Sde Ephron in the Machpelah. So it's, in a sense, begins with the Maase Machpelah and it ends with the Maase Machpelah. And the whole chapter discusses life events in the life of a person, a marriage, the death, children. There are a number of important lessons that we could learn from here. Now, just starting from the beginning, it says here that Sora lived, Chaye Sora, Pasuk Tav Gimel, Pasuk Aleph, Vayu Chaye Sora, Mea Shona, V'Esrim Shona, V'Sheva Shonim Shnei Chaye Sora. That Sarah's life was 127 years. And it says that she died in Kiryas Arba in Hebron. Avram came to mourn her. Now, we're all familiar with the Medrash. The Medrash says that Sarah heard of the Akedah, and this brought about her sudden death. So why did she die? Because of the Akedah? So if you would take it in its simple form, the scare, the concern, is enough for the person's heart to stop. When you give a person news suddenly, sometimes it's too much for the person to be able to take. So therefore, the difference from Sora to Avram, they want to say, is that by Avram, this is a Shmuis, it's printed over in the discourses of Rabbi Yishmael Lebes, Mir Rosh Hashiva. He wants to say that by Avram, it was told to him gradually, take your son, Bincha, your only son, Sherahafta, that you love, Es Yitzchak, the Aleu, you know, a whole sentence. So a person gradually hears it, and Migivetzachzu, you know, it's not a sudden demand. Whereas over here, it was the Sora, immediately they opened the door and they told him. And immediately it says that the shock, dramatic shock that took place. Otherwise, a person acclimates himself little by little to a circumstance. We find this a number of times. We find this by when Yaakov Avinu, when he was told that Yosef was living, when he was told that Yosef was living. So they went ahead and they had Serach Bas Osher to play the music for him and say, Oh, Yosef Chai, little by little she brought in like a song and began to sing a tune. Because although it was good news, the sudden shock that could come from the news also would have been enough to, to destroy, to break it. But especially when it was bad news. Porcha nishmasa, because the reaction of a person is not able to take that. Another interpretation is that Sora was despondent, some say, the Balamus, that Sora was despondent, that she wasn't given this opportunity. the fact that why did Hashem pick on Avram? Why didn't he pick on Sarah? So perhaps he would question that she'd been his koach, the strength to go ahead and to withstand, you know, to undertake the sakeda. Maybe she would have failed. So that alone brought her into a very despondent mood. But this is difficult to comprehend, you know, that the mother would have wanted to have that opportunity. It's really, we're dealing in things and thoughts that we really can't understand. But there's another reason that they say, that again Rav Shmulevitch offers. He says that really for any person to be able to stand up to the nisoyon of the akedah, beyond the physical keichas, the powers of a parent, expect that's more than a parent can do. Yet the Ribbono Shel Olam, whenever he gives you a nisoyon, the Ribbono Shel Olam gives you the koach to stand up to that nisoyon. Because otherwise he wouldn't give you the test. So just like he gives you the test, he gives you a divine gift of strength to be able to withstand that test. A person, however, who he doesn't give that test to, does not have that gift of strength to be able to stand up to that test. So Avraham Avinu, that was given the nisoyon, was given the mission, the test of bringing his son as an akeda, God gave him the strength to be able to withstand that and to be able to overcome that. But since this wasn't demanded of Sarah, she wasn't given the mission to bring the akeda, so therefore she was not the recipient of this additional spiritual strength that God gave Avraham Avinu. And therefore, when she was exposed to this, porcha nishmasa. These are reasons that are offered why Sarah's response to the akeda.
The Torah emphasizes, let's look back in the beginning in the first passage, Bayu chaye Sarah, Mea shana, Ve'asrim shana, V'sheva shanim, Shnei chaye Sarah. These are years in the life of Sarah. So now the Chazal tell us that when she was one age, the idea is that the life of Sarah is three different age groups. So we know what they say. For example, the idea is that Sarah didn't live, it says, 127 years. But if you look at the Hebrew, it says, at the language, Mea, 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years. Each one has inserted the word years. That it's not all 127, but 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years. So each period, they tell us, one has her beauty and her innocence, and all of this is taken, this period that she had to accomplish in a certain time frame is taken into the next time frame, second time frame is taken into the third time frame, meaning that her whole life was a life of added years. And that's why it says Shnei Chaye Sarah. These were years in the life of Sarah, meaning even the period that you spend in this world, that's not the whole life. The period that you spend in this world is the life of Sarah. Now we know that the fact is, like they always give the mashal, the life that the child in is his mother's womb is also life. The question is that the true living? When does the living become? But everybody agrees it's a form of life. So that's a form of life before. There's a form of life here. There's a form of life after. So these were the Shnei, Chaye, Sarah, the life that we see. Now we don't know. We know for one thing is sure. We were living before we came in this world. We don't know. We know that. How do we know that? If somebody will tell you, so you'll say, I don't believe it because I don't understand, I don't realize it, I don't remember it. There's nobody in the world here that's going to claim, after Adam Arishan, there's nobody that's going to claim that he never was carried by his mother and there was no such thing as having life in the womb. Everybody, the biggest skeptic and agnostic, right, would go ahead and say that he lived in his mother's womb. Although because he has to see it. He didn't prove he sees somebody else, but didn't know him. That everybody accepts. So the same idea we have to realize is that the neshama hashoras hanefesh, the idea that the neshama remains and lives in what we believe in a nicer world. Like they bring the mashal in a nicer world that somebody called in the architect and he tells an architect, I want you to design a house for me, the Bali Musa bring down. So he says, but I want two things in this. Here's all the materials, but I want two things. I want a very large lobby or entrance foyer hall. And then I want a very large hall, you know, for a dining hall, a main social hall. So the architect looks and he comes back. He says, I have the land here, he says, but you're going to have to make a choice. If you want a large foyer, you're not going to be able to have the large social room. If you want a large social room, your foyer is going to have to be smaller. Now, you make the choice. So the same thing the Ghazal tell us. Really, there is definitely two worlds. That's true, but one is going to have to be curtailed. If we want to build towards the life there, then we have to curtail our little foyer here. That means not to make all the, not to be able to have all the pleasures and everything we want in this little foyer, because we have to save for the big room. If, however, you want to gorge yourself in the smorgasbord, so you have to realize that in the banquet, you'll be lacking. You won't get the pleasure that you were destined to get in the banquet. So these are, but these are all years, shnei chayei sor, years in the life of sor. Now, the again, on this word of this concept is not original that Hirsch says, because everybody stops really on that. The idea of, it says, for example, the same in the end of the pasuk, in the end of the chapter, in verse, in chapter 27, it says, Eile yemei shnei chayei Avraham asher chai. I mean, in chapter 27, we read, these are the days of the years of Avram, that Avram lived. All right? Near the end of the, just for a moment, if you take a look, look at Zion at 7 and look at Yud Zion 17. There's a difference in both passages. In 25:7, it says, Ve'ele yemei shnei chayei Avraham asher choy. These are the days of the years of Avram's life, which he left. Now, Meir Shona, Shivim Shona, Chomesh Shonim. Now, by Yishmael, it also says, Meas Shona, Shleishim Shona, Visheva Shonim. Uses the expression of Meas, all right? But one thing that it doesn't say by Yishmael, and it says by Avram, is Yemei. By Yishmael, it says, Ve'ele Shnei. This is an observation that I'm making. By Yishmael, it says, Ve'ele Shnei. And by Avram it says, Ve'ele Yemei. Now, what is the answer? So really, in the Gesher Achayim, of Tikhatsinsky, he doesn't bring down Yishmael, but we'll understand, he brings down by Chayei Avram. So he says, Gesher Achayim is like an encyclopedic work, halachically, and also the third section is the only place where you find that they even wrote it over and been printed in English. It's very difficult. He speaks in the, that was, lived in our day, must have passed away about 30 years ago. But the halachic dinim of Avelis take up two books, which are very important. The third one speaks of Ashoras HaNefesh. A lot of it is Kabbalistic, but it's in a way that perhaps if a person concentrates, he can understand. And it's that part was translated in English. But one of the things that he writes in this third parsha is where it says, Yemei Shnei Chayei. What does it have to say, the idea of Yemei and Chayei? So he differentiates between Arichas Yomim and Arichas Shonim. There is such a thing as Arichas Yomim, as long days, and you wish someone Arichas Shonim, long years. What's the difference? Because we also say, for example, Kibi in Mishle, Shlomo says, Yirbu Yomecha, Ve'yosifu lecha shenos chayim. We use that expression many times. We use it in our davening, in Yom Neroyim. Kivi yirbu yomecha ve'yosifu shenos chayim. Your days should be multiplied, should be added on years of life. Now, a person, he says, whose life is wasted, his total life may be complete, but his days, a lot of it were wasted. So that person doesn't have arichas yomim. If he becomes old, he has arichas shonim, many years, but he doesn't have really arichas yomim. So he says that a story is told, and this of course is probably Jewish folklore, but it puts a point that in a city where the Beis HaKfaris had a number of matzevas, it was full of matzevas, and the age of the niftorim were very young. One, it says, he was 20 years old, and one was 25, and one was 30, and one was 50. So everybody that went into the Beis HaKfaris would wonder, why do people die at such an early age? So the answer given, really, he says, by here we don't speak about the years that they lived, we speak about the days that they lived, meaning the days that they accomplished. So this one may have lived to be 120, but he only had 25 years of days. It's like, they use this in English, you also have similar stories, like the joke that goes about the lawyer. When the lawyer came to the Pearl Gates, so everybody got up out of respect, and they told him, you're one of the oldest people that has ever come here. So he says, what do you mean old? He says, I'm only 72. So they said, not according to your timesheets. The lawyer, you know what I mean? He wrote in how many hours? I mean, he had arichas yomim without arichas shonim. But over here, that's an old story that they tell. And even how to win friends and influence people, they have that motto. They used to have a motto, died at 30 and buried at 70. I don't know if you... The idea is that the person, like, finishes life at 30 and he's buried at 70. So you do have the concept of arichas shonim without arichas yomim. So when it says... Now, I'm saying, so when it says Yemei Shnei Chayei Avraham, when it also mentions days, so it shows really that every day that there was arichas yomim. Now, if you take a look by Yishmael in verse 17, Yishmael lived... Sure, it says there that he lived days. The end, it all turned out nice. He lived 137 years, right? It wasn't that bad. He had arichas shonim, but he didn't have arichas yomim. Means the days that he lived from those 137 years, how many productive days would you find? And I wanted to differentiate between Avram and between Yishmael, like he brings down arichas yomim and shonim, and that comes out to be a very clear point. Now, getting back to this, it says Avram came to Sarah to eulogize Sarah, and to cry over her death. There's some interesting midrashim there, but there is a interpretation again brought down by Balei Musar, and it's pasuk. Vayavi Avram lispod l'Sarah v'lifkosa. He came to eulogize Sarah and to mourn her, cry over her. Now, the chaf of the word lifkosa, we see, is very small. Chav zi'irah. You notice the word in Hebrew, lifkosa, is written with a small chav. So why is it written with a small chav? And also, if you note, it says lispod l'sara, eulogize her, and then to cry. Normally, the tears at someone's death precedes the eulogy. Why here afterwards? So we have spoken in previous classes, I don't want to repeat exactly, but in the but this is a little bit differently. The Sefer brings down an Pirkei de Rebbe Lazar, so it has an interesting description of the events that took place. It says the following: after the Akedah, the Sultan came to Sarah, and he said to Sarah, "Did you hear the latest news?" So she answered, "No, I didn't." So he said, your old husband took your young son and he brought him for a sacrifice. I'm quoting from the Pirkei Rebbe Lazar. And the son is crying and the son is moaning because he can't escape. He can't save himself. So as soon as she heard this, so she immediately began crying and moaning. She cried three chios. That's where we had the three tekios on Rosh Hashanah. She had three yalolos, three strong sobs, and that's why we have the shuos. And then her soul just left her body and she died. Avram Avinu came and he found her dead. And that's why it says, Vayavi Avram lispod l'sarah v'lifkosa. Where did he come? He came Mehar Hamoriah. So this gives you like a vivid description. We always say the Sultan told Sarah, but the Pirkei de Rebbe Lazar goes into a vivid description of how this took place.
Three chapters. Now, the major parts deal with the death of and the burial of Sarah and the emergence of Rivka. And these are the two matriarchs of Israel. So actually, Chayei Sarah speaks of the change that took place. The second chapter deals with Eliezer Eved Avram, who went to find the proper mate for Yitzchak. And it's interesting, when he goes to find the proper mate, we'll speak of this in detail later, he devises a certain plan to have, we'll say, heavenly intervention in helping him find the proper mate. And he goes to great length and detail
And the Torah seemingly does the same when it repeats some 68 sentences and seems to repeat every word. Chazal make note of this, and they say that that the common talk of the servants of our fathers are greater than teiros and shelbonim, than many of the laws and statutes of their descendants, of their children. Because it seems that it went in such detail, there's much chokhmah in the words of Eliezer, which he did everything with understanding. But the main thing is that from the death of Sora to the birth of Rivka, in the sense her emergence, we find in verse 67, it reads there, that Yitzchak brought her to the tent of the mother Sarah. Vayikach es Rivka vatilei leyisho vayeo veho vayenochem Yitzchak achareyimei. That he first brought her to the tent of Sarah, and then he married her. Vayikach es Rivka vatilei leyisho vayenochem achareyimei. So Hirsch says, re-emphasizes an interesting point here that he uses throughout. He says, this is a quote, the more she became his wife, it says here, Vatilei leisha vayeo veho. The more she became his wife, the more he loved her. So he says, like this marriage of the first Jewish son, most Jewish marriages, he says, are contracted not by passion, but by reason and judgment. Parents, friends consider which young people are really suited to each other. They bring them together. And then love grows more and more. Most non-Jewish marriages are made by what they call, quote, love. And one has only to glance at the novels depicting life to notice what a gulf there usually yawns between the love before marriage and after. How rapid and insipid everything then seems, how different from all the glamour one has imagined. Says, such is blind. Every step into the future brings disappointment. But of the Jewish marriage, it says, Vayikach es Rivka, Vatilei leisha vayeo veho. The wedding is not the culmination, but the seed and the root of love. Now, Hirsch wrote this, how many years ago we're dealing with? Over 100 years ago, probably, when he wrote this. And as time has proven that how true the words come out. I mean, it may not be that the distinction between Jewish marriages now, but what Jewish marriages traditionally were, that the idea of love came as a serious relationship that was built up with mutual values and mutual intents and so on. That kind of a love has its great meaning. But there's another interesting observation made here by the Brisker Rosh. He said that it says here that he brought her to the tent and then she became his wife. And the Targum says, the Targum Munkelis on this pasuk reads that Yitzchak brought her the Mishkona, meaning to his dwelling place, the Chozo, and he saw. See, the Targum always gives the literal interpretation. The words of the Pasuk, and it's written with Ruach HaKodesh, the words of the Pasuk itself just says, he brought Rivka there, and she was his wife. The Targum interprets the following. He brought Rivka lemishkona, to her dwelling place. V'chozo, and he saw, le'osakni uvdaha ki uvda desora ime, that her actions, her deeds, were the same as his mother Sora. Then v'nasivya Rivka. Then he decided to marry Rivka. So what does this mean? Here the Eved, in the sentence before in 66, it says, Vaisapeu Eved li Yitzchak es kol advarim asher osa. The Eved told Yitzchak how the heavens opened up and God pointed a finger with all the omens and the augurs and everything else. God pointed a finger. This is the light. Yet it seems that wasn't enough. Although he had a tefillah on, the tefillah was responded, so he saw here that the fact that all of this happened, that still was not enough. Why? Because only when he saw her actions, that her actions were as pure and as good as his mother, only then did he decide to go ahead and to finish this union and to consummate this marriage. So the fact that all the miracles happened and everything showed that they were supposedly predestined That itself was not enough for Yitzchak. And he emphasizes that because in the Targum of sentence 67, which follows verse 66, which speaks about showing how Eliezer had kfitzas aderech, so you see that the meaning that he was able like to come this, in the same date, right, to where he was going without crossing the international dateline. The idea was he was able to come the same time. The prayers that he had were answered. So everything says they were meant for each other. Yet before Yitzchak undertook to have Rivka to be his wife, so he wanted to see that she should have the same components as the mother had. Now, it really is very interesting in the expression that is used. It says, Oso hachachto, earlier, what was the significance of having her like the mother? Avram and Yitzchak, Avram and Sarah personified the Midas HaChesed. We know that they personified the attribute of Chesed. Now Yitzchak, we know, had the Midas HaDin, meaning absolute judgment. But Yitzchak here wanted, it seems, that Rivka should be the personification in her Midos of Sarah. Why? Because Yitzchak felt that since he represented judgment, which is severe din, therefore the Ezer Kenegdo, the other component that would be able to, we'll say sometimes, to stand up against him and to reflect the other approach would be Chesed. So therefore, you could interpret, I say, that when he brought her looking for Sora Ishte, what did he see there in the house? He saw Neros, what did he see? A bracha mitzuya be'iso, it says, that there was a blessing in the challah, that the candles were there. So the idea was, he saw Chesed. That's what he wanted to prove. Because she could be a perfect wife, she could be a tzaddikus of her own, but he wanted to make sure that she had within her the Midas HaChesed, and that's what Eliezer uses the phrase, Oso Hochachto Le'avdecho Le'Yitzchak. If this woman comes out and says, I will give you water and mass and so on, this woman, Hochachto, you have designated for Yitzchak. Why? Because Yitzchak, being that Yitzchak personifies the Midas HaDin, the attribute of strict judgment and justice, it's necessary for him to have Chesed. And using a prototype of Chesed by a woman, what could he expect? So that's why he expected her to follow in the footsteps of Sarah, so he would have the prototype of Chesed. And she was obviously raised in a home that was Lavan Ho'aramu. Now, Avram Avinu insisted to Eliezer that he find a wife from his family. Now, he didn't say to him that he should find a wife that is not an idolater, because in a sense, we know that Lavan worshipped idols, right? Rachel, later in the stories, Rachel stole the idols, so Lavan worshipped idols. Yet, Avram didn't say, go find someone there who is not an idolater. He was concerned for something else. Because from Meshknani, he said, under no circumstances should you take a daughter from this from these people. Now, there were people there, as we discussed in Lech Lecha, there were people there in Canaan who were not idolaters. In fact, that's why Avram Avinu set forth to Canaan. God told him, Lech Lecha Me'atzecha, he could have gone to Florida, he could have gone any place. He went in the direction of Canaan. Why? Because Shem was there. And Shem was the was his ancestor, and Shem, it says, was a Kohen L'Kehel Elyon. So at least in Canaan, they had a school that taught belief in one God. They didn't have this in Choron. That's why Avram Avinu had to leave there. Now, there also Eliezer, we knew that he insisted that he cannot have his son marry Eliezer. Eliezer desperately wanted this. Now, Eliezer was a big tzaddik. He was Eliezer Eved Avram. It says, Dole Umashke Mitoras Rabo Lachem. It says, if you had to have the second person in the world, we'll say, in his understanding and service of God, it would have been Eliezer. Yet Avram overlooks that. Why? Because they are Canaan. What was the deficiency that he found the Canaanites that he would not find from the Arab and Aram? It was a deficiency of character. And that could give us a little bit of an understanding, because Eliezer knew, if we look at it from this view, Eliezer knew his family, and he knew the influence that Avram had in his family, and he knew there were no other families like his. Yet Avram insisted that he go there. What is he going to find there? He's not going to find another Avram Avinu there in the sense of the person's theology and belief in God. The only thing that he will find there is perhaps a person with outstanding midos tovos, with outstanding attributes. Eliezer realized that he himself was a Canaanite. Now, even if he didn't show within him he was a very fine person and so on, but he still was a descendant of this heir, so he didn't know what the future children would be. That's why Avram Avinu perhaps insisted to go back there. So now we can understand why Eliezer, they ask, many discussed, why did Eliezer ask for this sign? The sign with the water. Why didn't he ask all kind of animamins? The girl would have to pass the test, that animamin and the 13 animamins or something like this. It seems he wasn't concerned with that. He was only concerned with chesed. The answer was because he realized that Avram Avinu felt that that's the most important thing. Like this, you would be able perhaps to teach them, if she has good egos, the theology, you would be able to teach them. But if the midas are bad, if she doesn't possess that, they say that it's more difficult to change one midah of a person, midah meaning one character trait of a person, than it is to master the entire Talmud, which in a sense we know how true it is, right? When we want to change our way of life for health reasons, for whatever reasons, you know how excruciating it is to be able, it's painful actually to do that. Avram wanted Bedavka, this type of a wife. So therefore Eliezer went ahead, and when he made up a list of what you're looking for, he was looking for the Lev Tov, right? For the good heart. That was the most important thing that Eliezer was looking for. He was looking that there should be a Lev Tov. Now, from here we see how important the Lev Tov is. Now, the Gemara says that you're not allowed to go ahead and let anything in your future be perchance. Like I'll walk outside and I'll say, if the fifth car that goes by is a Japanese car, so I'll invest in Japanese stock. Well, that would be perhaps okay. But if I say, we'll see the difference, if the fifth car that goes by is a Japanese car, I'm going to go take a trip to New York tomorrow. So that's not permitted. So the Gemara says in Chulin that every nochash, meaning any type of a probing into the future, witchcraft or augury, she'ene k'Eliezer eved Avram, that is not like an omen, is not like Eliezer, is not nochash. That means if the person, Eliezer was seemed to be an exception, although it was a very strong sign, but it seems that we still permit Eliezer. So what is the idea? Why was Eliezer permitted? So like I told you, if every fifth car is a Japanese car, so I'm going to invest in Japanese stock. That makes sense, right? Because it shows Japan's doing a good business. So Mamela, it pays to invest in stocks in the cars. I won't say that I'm in some way depending on magic or on the occult. However, if I say, if there be the fifth car, I'm going to take a train instead of a plane. That's already something which is nichush. Here, the fact that he said, and he left all of this perchance, it was all a reason, basically, to show the idea of chesed, the great chesed and wisdom of chesed that she had a lev tev. Now, the expression of a lev tev is the, we know how important that is. In fact, in Pirkei Avos, we read there that Amala in the second parak, in the second chapter, it says, go out and see which is the best way that a person should follow. So one said an ayin tev, a good eye, one said a chover tev, the other one said a shochen tev, a good neighbor. So he said the best heart. So he said, I see Rebbe Elazar ben Aruch, because within the best heart, everything flows from the heart. So therefore, Elazar ben Aruch said that you have to go ahead and you really have to examine the heart. Now, that's the idea why Eliezer Eved Avram wanted to go ahead and pick this type of a simen in order to show the Lev Tov. Now, they go even further, the Balei Musar, they say, and Hirsch already said this also, if you look into what she did, really appreciate what she did. She went ahead, and let's take a look at a few verses that discuss her actions. She told Eliezer in sentence in chapter 24, it says, as it starts in sentence in chapter 24, verse 17, says the servant ran to meet her and he said, "Give me some water from your pitcher." Now, he ran to meet her because he saw a miracle happen, all right? He saw a miracle happen. But the water went up to greet her, so that God already performed a miracle, yet he followed through. And he ran as a servant, as an eved. She recognized he was a servant. What did she answer him? She said, "Shesay adeni, drink my master." So that itself shows a reflection in her speech. And then she hurried up. The idea was to my hair. She hurried up. She hurried and she took off the pitcher from her yad, from her hand, and she gave him to drink. Now, the difference is, why does it have to say Vatamayer and she hurried? What's so important about hurrying? I mean, should say Vateret Kado Al Yodah Vatishkeyu. She went ahead and she took off the pitcher. But the difference is, from hurrying to not hurrying, could be from the difference of doing it as a form of a mitzvah, or just doing it as common courtesy. The fact is, if you go ahead and you take it off and give them to drink, it's maybe common courtesy or kindness. But the fact that Vatamayer, that she ran to do it, right? What does that show? Now, if you recall, we saw one more example of chesed we learned last week. It said there by Avram, when they came to Avram, so it uses the expression, Ve'el HaBokor Rots Avram. It doesn't just say Ve'el HaBokor Avram Holach El HaBokor. But it says, Ve'el HaBokor Rots Avram. Avram ran. So it sees the idea of running can go ahead and make a mundane task into a service of God, into a mitzvah. So the Torah therefore emphasizes here also, you could say, the expression, Vatamayer, she hurried. And every time it speaks about her, it says, Vatamayer, she hurried. If you notice in sentence 20, Vatamayer, she hurried after... It says she finished drinking him, so she said, "I'll also go ahead and give to drink your camels." Vatamayer, and she hurried. Even dealing with the camels, she also reacted in that same way. Correct? She hurried. Now, in sentence 28, you also see, in sentence 28, after the revelation, she goes back to the family to tell them that she found somebody. So what does it say there? Vatora tzanara vatageid lebeisima. She ran. She did everything. Now you'll say it's a running family, because in 29, Lavan also ran. Right? It says in the next sentence, but Rivka had a brother whose name was Lavan, and he also ran. All right, but the Chazal emphasized that the idea of his running was also for a purpose. True. But why did he run? He ran not because l'shem mitzvah chesed, but he wanted to be the recipient of the chesed. But the vayorot's meaning he ran. So that's true. The emphasis is on running, because running can take a month, make whatever you're asking from somebody, you're asking a very simple thing. And if you run and do it, so it shows a certain chesed. So that's important. Now, when she gave the camels to drink, Hirsch says this, and this is repeated also in what I was talking about. Can you picture what we're dealing with? She will draw, a camel drinks enough at a time to enable it to go, I once gave you the measurement, for 3 days, a camel drinks, and you could go 3 days without water, all right? In fact, he says maybe the word gomal comes from that, gimel, the idea of three. A camel's stomach, he says, is provided with pouches in which fluid is retained, all right? So what does she do? When Eliezer had left in the pitcher, it says she carefully empties into the trough. She could have left it in or thrown it out. He says no, but the Jewish nature is as economical with his forces as it is extravagant with them. Now, this is the way Hirsch looks at it. Why did she spill it out? We'll see, there are two approaches. It said here, don't forget we're dealing in a place where water is not plentiful, because they used to guard the water, if you recall, until people would come. So it says that she went ahead, Vatmayer v'tar kadra l'ashekes, v'toretz eda l'abor l'isho, v'tishav l'chog malo. She went ahead and she spilled it in to the el'ashokes, to the trough. So why didn't she throw it out? She carefully empties. All right, so we'll see what hers says. He says the idea is because a person has to be economical. When you think into it, when you learn Chumash, throughout the Chumash you see, we spoke last Shabbos, and it's something that in our generation, the children, we're speaking about the younger generation that's coming up, how they have no values of money. And the idea is, since money means so little to them, so therefore somebody else's money, right, also means very little. And when you look at the obvious, you see to the contrary throughout Chumash. And this is what Hirsch is pointing out here. To waste a little water, you don't waste a little water. If you could go ahead and you could give it to the animals, so therefore instead of just spilling it out, she spilled it into the trough. This is what he says. Now we know that two other things. By Avraham Avinu in the beginning, it says that he took he took 10 camels from the camels of his master. The master's camels were special, the Gemara said. What was special about them? We always quote it, but we never really think into what it means. He locked up the mouths of the camels, of the animals, that when they walk, they shouldn't feed on other people's fields. You remember, we spoke last Shabbos about the dispute between Lot's Royim and Avram's Royim, that Lot went ahead and he, how did the separation start? Because Lot permitted his animals to graze in other fields, and Avram wouldn't permit that. So this unique type of conduct that Avram was noted for really depicted and made the difference between Avram to Lot. Dealing with your animal going into somebody else's field. You say, but that's commonplace. I mean, you expect that if you have animals going along. No, Avram went to the degree that he went ahead to, nobody should have that loss. Yaakov Avinu is coming to greet later his brother Esau. What does he do? He stays overnight by himself. He forgot a few little items there. A few little items. So, how important is that? I mean, you're going out here in such a time when people are concerned and so on, you forgot Pachim Tani. So this really means a lot in the whole person. So the Gemara says, why is that so important? Because they never take things that don't belong to them. It goes together. If you take things that don't belong to you, right? We see sometimes this generation, they could drop, we used to pick, and we still do, we pick up a penny. Not that it's worth anything, but if you see a penny on the floor, I still pick up a penny. There's not a new generation, I don't think they go down for less than a quarter. So the idea is, you know, a dime will surely say, I'm not going to bend over for a dime. What's a dime? So they both go together. The fact that they don't bend over for a dime, so taking somebody else's dime doesn't mean anything. You see, they're both interrelated. And you see this also. The fact is that if he makes sure that his cows or animals should not go in somebody else's pasture, then every penny has a value. So then he'll remain late at night and eat so late. So this is the lesson like Hirsch does. But besides that, just think of how much she had to go ahead to quench their thirst, to give all of these animals a camel 3 days, right? So this girl, this poor girl, kept on running back and forth and back and forth to give them to drink. And who was standing there? Eliezer, who was a grown man, was standing there. Maybe there were some more servants. They were standing there. And they didn't help her. She went ahead and she did this. Now, who would go and do such a thing? I mean, a girl should go and do it. You drank already. Go help yourself. I'll let you, here is the pitcher. Go ahead and give the animals the drink. So the chesed that she had was so great that it's beyond comprehension. I mean, such a chesed. So Yitzchak, that's why Eliezer chose this, to show the greatness of the chesed. Now, it's not only the chesed that she had. Some point out the wisdom that she also showed, the chokhmah and the derech eretz that she showed. The Beis HaLevi, in his interpretation on these few phrases, says the following. Let's go through one after another what Eliezer made up. He's going to say, Agmieni Noah Meat Mayim Mikade. Let's look back at the verse. In 17. He didn't know how she's going to appear. If you notice in 14, when he's playwriting to God, so it says there, the girl that I'll tell her, Hatino Chade Feyeshte. The Omra should say, "Vigang Malecho Ashke." I'll tell her that turn your pitcher, Atino Kadeh, move over your pitcher, Veshte, and I'll drink. So why did he actually say, and she'll say, drink, and also I will give your camels to drink? So why did he use the word Kadeh Veshte? I mean, give me a little bit of water. What's the importance of Hatinor Kadech? Move over your pitcher. The girl that I'll ask for a little water will give me water, but he uses the expression Hatinor Kadech. And if you notice in 17, he says also, give me, when she finally does appear, he says, give me a little water, Mikadech, from your kad. All right? So now the question is, we learn from that itself, we assume, that there was no, and he emphasized Kadech, he didn't want to use a glass. He prayed for the girl to come along that shouldn't have a disposable cup. All she should do is have a kad. What's the difference? Because if she has a kad and she's going to go and drink from the kad, if she wouldn't have a real good heart, so the first thing she would say, who knows, perhaps he's an unclean person, he's carrying around bacteria or some illness, and the saliva will get into the jug, and it's not proper, it's not right, so perhaps he's, I can't do that. Now if a person, however, goes through this, right, and she'll say, yeah, but the man is, I can't think about that, the man is thirsty, I have to give them. That already shows the first step, he says. That shows that she has chesed. Now, how will she find? You could have chesed, but then does she have also manners? Is she courteous? How is that going to be proven? For example, it says that he didn't drink out the whole water. He left over a little bit of water, all right? So he says, if I leave a little bit of water in the cod, and she goes along and she keeps that water and she takes that water home, so I don't want her to be Yitzchak's wife because who knows, she'll bring in all kind of germs into the house. He says, maybe Tata, the person isn't gesund, maybe he's not healthy, and it's not kedai, it's not proper that the family should end up drinking this water from the stranger. Now, if the other hand, she'll decide not to take the water home, and she'll just take the rest of the water and in front of him, she'll just spill it on the ground, right? So that shows her disdain. It's not courteous. In a sense, she's shaming him. So the proper way for her to do would say that you finish drinking and I'll also give your gmalim to drink. And therefore, in this way, she won't just waste the water. First, she won't take the water home. And the other hand, she won't insult him by spilling out the water. She's just using the rest of the water to what? To feed the gmalim. So this is a little bit different than hers. Hers said she's using the rest of the water for the gmalim because a Jewish person is very economical. The Beis Halevi is like saying she decides to use the rest of the water for the gmalim because that is the way, the proper manner, which shows that she is courteous, on the other hand, she is concerned. So that's why with her chokhmah, she went ahead, and he wanted this, and she responded also, v'gam gmalecha ashker. Now, even so, she even went further, correct? Now, although Eliezer really did everything that was possible, we have to realize, playwriting such a scenario, he did everything that was possible, even so, he didn't depend on that, but he also prayed to what? To Hashem. So you have to have tefillah to Hashem even if you did everything else. Everything was possible. And then like we said earlier in this year, Yitzchak went one step further. He wanted to take all of this leiv teiv and see if it fits into his mission of chesed and dealing in the footsteps of Avram and Sarah. So he went even one step. But now we see even more than Eliezer. Eliezer, she says, Eliezer just said, v'gam gmalecha ashker, give something to drink to the camel. So you give the camel a glass of water, but to go and fill up all his pouches, right? I mean, he never asked for that. That's a tremendous chesed. She added that. She said, ad in kilu lishtais, that I am going to go ahead and give them to drink until they finish drinking. Now, why did she say this? Because perhaps Eliezer, he says, will go back and think, why is she going to give the camel to drink? Because she's in a quandary here. She can't take the rest of the water home, and she can't go ahead and spill out the water. So therefore, she'll say, I'll give the camel to drink, meaning she'll use the rest of that water to give the camel to drink. So she's very smart, but it's not going to cost her any additional labor because the water is there and she's in a quandary, so she got the perfect solution. So it shows she's a smart woman, right? But it doesn't prove the act of chesed to that much. So therefore she went even further. And she said, she finished saying, until they're finished drinking. So there were many different kadim of water that she had to go through. So this, even Eliezer could have been left questioning, but the way she came through in her format, so there was really no question at all, except that her chesed was that great. And what did she have? What was the chesed? The chesed that she had was really the Lev Tev, and the Lev Tev had all of these milas, all of these great benefits that a person can only look for.